You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Is this the one with? I'm looking at it now, I think. Gotta be. I see goats. I mean, how many UFO goat pictures are there? There's some goats that are kind of running along a cliffside, and there's a lady in. You
Yes.
see her in the rearview mirror, kind of, or whatever that side mirror. Yeah.
Yeah, the side mirror, yeah.
We'll link
Yeah, I
into
mean,
the chat room.
I had contact with her, literally almost, like what, a week or so after she shot it, and she was perplexed by it. And I should point out that she is a incredibly well-known artist and photographer, and she wanted to remain anonymous. And of course, I've kept that, but she knows what she's doing with a camera. And one of the first things that she said to me in private was, I work with Photoshop every day in my artwork. How do you know I didn't do this in Photoshop? And I said, because you just asked me, how do I know you didn't do it in Photoshop? That is not something that a hoaxer does. And the second part was, when one looks at the EXIF data, which is the data that is under the image that tells you when it was shot, with what camera, at what time of day, there's absolutely no evidence of being tampered with in Photoshop at all. And I'm very aware on minute granular levels what it looks like when something is composited. I know exactly what to look for because I do it every day of my life at my job. And so I've gotten pretty good at being able to spot even really good composites.
That is a
And
weird UFO, man. That is weird.
it is weird. And I'll tell you what's weird about that, and this is what I wanted to this was a shot to me that I had hoped would change the way people look at UFO photographs and maybe the phenomena itself, because I think it's important that if it is the phenomena being represented in that photograph, and it's a big if still. But in the report, which you just threw the link up to Above Top Secret. If you go on abovetopsecret.com and look, there's a thread about this whole thing. And you'll see me get drunk through the coals about it and all of that stuff that always happens. But ultimately, the report that I wrote, first of all, if you look at it, it looks like the disc is lopsided. It looks like the right side of it is kind of deflated, and the other side is kind of round. Well, when you drop that thing into a program like Photoshop and you look at the individual channels and you drop it into what's called lab color, which is a different mode than RGB or CMYK or any of the other modes, and you do a very simple thing, auto adjust on the A channel, you get a perfectly symmetrical object, it appears. And this is because the data is there. But in the composited image of the R, the G, and the B channels, it's simply not visible. But there is channel-specific data, and that is crucial to talk about when you're talking about UFO photographs, because faking channel-specific data, I will say, to me, is nigh impossible to do, and to do well, and not ruin the composited image. It's very hard to do, if not impossible, to that degree. And and in the end, I said I don't know what it is, but what I can tell you is that UFO has aligned itself to her camera. It is not aligned to the horizon. And there are symmetrical angles on that thing that you can literally draw a line on and align it to her camera perfectly. And I think anyone, looking at it would say, well, that's evidence that it's composited. But the problem is that no evidence points to that.
Yeah.
It all points to it's something there, it's something of some distance and some size, is aligning itself to her. And that is the bigger point, which is what we now know, or I think we should know about this phenomena, is that it negates itself. Every good case will fall on its own sword, from Roswell on up.
I have a question about, the way the – it's interesting. It's obviously a very interesting picture. It's interesting, too, that you see her in the mirror, I presume because she knows what she's doing. She doesn't have the camera right up to her face like normal – like I do.
Right.
Which amateurs do when they take a picture, I guess. So she – does all that kind of line up with the is there a way to figure out the angular? Okay, that all makes sense that it would come off that way, you know what I mean? Or do you have to actually see the mirror and do all the measurements?
Well, when you look at the picture itself and you look at the raw shot, I mean the shot that hasn't been scaled and hasn't been sized or cropped or anything like that. I mean, you're dealing with a camera that is taking the shot. So that's your ultimate level point. Your camera is level. I mean, no matter what angle your camera is at, your camera is shooting cone plane, if you get my drift.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
And so, you know, her camera was clearly held at an angle to the horizon. The horizon is clearly at an angle. The problem is that the object in the sky has symmetry on it that is level to her camera, to the frame itself, which means to the camera itself. And so there's not really a lot of mathematics that you have to do to figure that out. I mean, it's really as simple as dragging a rule down the picture and saying, well, there's her camera. Here's her camera with a rule on it in the picture, which is a great thing to have, by the way, a picture of the shooter in the shot.
Why is that?
That, to my knowledge, has never happened. Well, I mean, it's good to have a look at what does the camera look like. Is there anything that you can see on or in front of the camera? You've got a mirror reflecting it back, so what's in front of it? Well, what is in front of it? Nothing. There is nothing there that should be reflecting. There's nothing there that, I mean, there's been every excuse put to that it's a in-camera refraction of her glasses glinting off the sun, reflecting in the mirror and bouncing around to the lens. That wouldn't make that. That would make a glare and not a solid object that seems to be reflecting sunlight.
Mm.
I've heard that. I've heard it's goat sweat. That's right, goat sweat.
Goat
sweat.
This
is one of the, yes, this is one of the things that someone put forth, that they felt that this was goat sweat that had been caught in freeze frame.
Oh, my God. Not to be confused with the internet meme Goatsy.
Right. Certainly not.
Yeah. Don't Google that one, folks. Don't Google Goatsy.
But, no, my God. But, you know, it's an odd photograph. And I really hoped that it would make a bigger impact than it actually did. You know, just about every photograph that Above Top Secret has brought me has been a fake, a hoax, and I've been able to show why, how it was done, you know, where is the back plate that they used to Photoshop the picture into, all of that. And people give you grief over that because they become invested in it. And so you get grief from them, like, you know, well, how do you know? How are you sure? I'm like, well, look at it. You know, could it be more obvious? You don't want to accept the answer. That's on you. That's not on me. I've given you the answer. You know, it's right in front of you. And everyone sees it but you. You're the one problem child. Why do you refuse to believe this or accept it as fact? I mean, it's demonstrably a fake. I've demonstrated that it's not real, and yet you still argue the point. Well, with this, it was almost the reverse of that.
Yeah.
Some people just refuse to believe that I didn't know what it was. They're like, no, he knows what it is, and he's not telling us, or,
what?
You know, he's working for Above Top Secret, and, you know, he's doing what they tell him to say so that we keep talking and they keep getting more advertising dollars. And, I mean, you know, I'm gonna throw away my reputation in this field to be associated with somebody that, you know, is doing something underhanded. I don't think so. You know, I've been the guy that blows the whistle on people like that. You know,
exactly. Yeah,
not the guy that joins them. You know,
that's a good segue in a sense to a question Vale asked, which I thought was kind of intriguing. He asked earlier in the chat if you think that UFO hoaxes, the laws should be changed to make UFO hoaxes illegal. I don't even know how you'd begin to do that. But it's an interesting question that I never even thought of. So it's worth talking about. What do you think? Should people who hoax? I don't even know how you would go about that. But I'll pose it to you first, and then I'll roll it around a little bit. What do you think? Should it be legal?
Well, I mean, I think if somebody takes a fake UFO shot and profits from it by saying it's real, and by that I mean doing lectures where they charge a couple $1,000 to do a lecture, or they write a book and they include these photos in the book as some sort of supportive content, then, yeah, I mean, technically there should be a class action lawsuit, because that's fraud. You're taking people's money under the guise that, you know, this is real. And it's clearly not. So, yeah, I think there should be some penalty for that. But I think the UFO field has been unbelievably poor at policing its own, you know. And by that, I just mean that when someone gets caught faking something, that's the end of them. Never shall you return. Go away. And that doesn't happen. You know, if someone pulls a fast one in any way in this field, they disappear for 8 months to 5 years, and they're back with a brand new book. Mm. And everybody is still willing to buy that book and go listen to them speak. And I think that's just delusional behavior, you know. I think we have to be a lot more stringent about what we do. And who we present. I mean, I still feel guilty about having a Schmidt and Carey on the show. You know, I mean, everybody knows Don Schmidt's background and why he left this field for a while or wasn't as active. You know, and yet I had him on the show because they wrote a book, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, I realize now that, you know, he's not exactly welcomed back into this field without having someone say something about his prior history in this field, and ultimately he should be held accountable for that. Now, you know,
he's
bigger. He's bigger than he's ever been. You know,
That's true.
I look at that and I go, yeah, there's something really not right about that. And
well, without getting too deeply into the details of that, is this an Imbrogno-esque turn of events?
I think so. I mean, I don't even know the whole story, I mean, in totality about what happened. But, I mean, I looked at it this way. He was back doing some work with Kevin Randles that I understood at the time that, you know, I asked him to come on. I'm like, well, if Randall is working with him again after what happened, and they were, you know, kind of tied at the hip, they were research partners. And, you know, when Schmidt came under fire, you know, basically, I think Randall said, well, the hell with him, you know, and no one should believe this man. And when I had him on the show, of course, they were working, as far as I know, as far as I've come to understand, it was part of the Roswell Dream Team. Kevin Randall was on that team. So was Carey and Schmidt.
Yeah.
And so, you know, is it all forgiven? Was it a misunderstanding? I didn't really follow the matter because I just kind of wrote it off at the time because I don't care about Roswell.
Yeah, there was no come to Jesus moment where we found out.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. And
That's too bad. And
Thale is absolutely right that Imbrogno is one of the only ones that have not come back.
I know. I'm yearning for. I feel like he would have the come to Jesus moment where he fesses up to whatever he did, if he did anything, or explains himself. I mean, I would wish he would speak out at least, even if he was like, go to hell, all of you, I'm out of here. That would be fine, too.
Yeah.
Don't leave us hanging, dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, man.
And that was it. I mean, so can you press charges if somebody, you know, deceives the public? No, because the public wants to believe it. You know, I mean, you know, this is why a lot of these paranormal shows say, you know, don't try this at home and for entertainment purposes only.
Yeah.
You know, that's why, because, you know, it's entertainment a lot for a lot of people, which infuriates me that it's entertainment for people. But for some people it is.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you kind of, you hit it there with the class action lawsuit. That's about all you could do. I mean, unless someone hoaxed a UFO in real time and they had to, like, get the police out there and fire department or some crazy stuff like that, then of course,
right.
they would, I think they almost would press charges against the person, you know, for something.
Right,
but,
right.
But, like, after the fact, if someone just fakes a UFO photo, aside from the possibility of a class action lawsuit, I don't think the government really cares one way or the other if someone did that. So,
I think.
Well, maybe they would appreciate it. Who knows?
I think you're right. I think they would appreciate it, you know, because I have a feeling that, you know, and I think it's pretty well known in most circles at this point that the UFO phenomenon has been a cover for black projects before. That doesn't negate that the UFO phenomenon is real, but whatever real means, but, you know, yeah, they've used that as a cover. So I'm sure that they appreciate any mud that can get burned in the water of covering a project that they want to keep secret, probably for good reasons. So,
exactly. I don't think it would deter. Vail's arguing that it would help battle hoaxes, and it would be because hoaxes are fraud. But again, I don't think any like district attorney worth his salt is gonna bring charges against some dude who faked a UFO photo that got everybody on the internet titillated for a couple weeks.
Exactly.
I mean that it's not worth their. It's not worth the hassle to them. So,
well, I mean, a judge would say, what are you bringing this to me for? You know, I mean, this is absurd. Why would you bring this to me? Because I mean, and you said this as well, I mean, in our little circle of the paranormal people, or the interested paranormal public, it's a big deal. Outside of that, nobody really knows about it. You know, it's like, there's very few and far between cases. I mean, O'Hare being one that garnered mass attention. It's not like, you know, I mean, the Phoenix Lights gained major attention. These are far and few between. I mean, the guy that hoaxed one shot that turns out to be him releasing gnats in front of his video camera. That's not gonna draw public attention. He might get some YouTube bucks, but that's about it. So, you know, I don't think people would care enough.
Exactly. Yeah. Vail argues again that he says they've sold millions of books talking big scale stuff, but still, it still falls under. Even if it went viral, you know, no one gets harmed by the viralness of it. You know, again, you know, unless it goes viral and it's like you have to pay $3 to see the rest of the video, and you do, and it turns out that it was a hoax, then you can go with a class action lawsuit. But I don't think anyone is going to get arrested for that, you know?
Well,
it's sort of buyer beware.
Yeah, the only thing that comes to mind for me, and I don't want to bring up a bad subject that nobody wants to hear about, but you know, everybody loves Art Bell, and we were all very excited that he was coming back and, you know, wanted to hear, you know, what he'd been doing and see how his new show was going to go. But I remember back in the day that a big story for three or four nights in a row was the Hale-Bopp Comet, and there was an object following behind the Hale-Bopp Comet, and this had been seen by an astronomer, and it was vetted, and it was real, and it was really there. And, I mean, this culminated in the suicide death of the Heaven's Gate cult. You know, this was all they needed, was something like that. And I mean, does anyone believe that if it hadn't been Hale-Bopp, it would have been something else? I'm sure it would have. But does it hurt people? Can it hurt people? Yeah, it can. You know, it can happen. You know, I think the whole thing with Hale-Bopp was a very interesting bit of radio, but you know, I think when you look at the impact that show probably had on the Heaven's Gate cult, and we don't know that it did or it didn't.
Yeah,
that's likely,
the thing. We never really ever found. Oh, I guess because
we can't know.
Yeah.
But I think one can pretty much surmise that, you know, the two being connected together. I mean, come on, really? And I mean, I certainly don't place blame on Art, and I certainly don't place blame on Whitley, who was on a few of those shows. But I mean, it's the media in general. It's just how it works. So you know, I don't remember what the origin of that story was, whether it was with this anonymous astronomer. I think that's where it kind of started. But should he have been held accountable? I mean, how do we know? I don't. It's just, it's one of those things where, yeah, people can get hurt, I think.
Mm.
And I think that might be a possible evidence of where someone did get hurt by something that was completely nonsense.
Exactly.
It's possible.
That's possible. Right. That's, you know, the best example is this one that's remotely possible. So it's not like this is some widespread issue.
No. Yeah.
It all goes back to, like, people don't take UFOs seriously as it is, so I don't think
yeah.
A hoaxed UFO photo, even if it's really good, people are going to be like, oh, that's interesting, but...
Exactly.
You know, we've already kind of addressed this, where it's, even if I went out and took a picture of a UFO, this is the best picture ever, the government's not going to be like, well, this guy in Boston took a UFO picture, the jig is up,
right.
You know,
yeah, exactly.
It's over. Even, you know, that's living within the realm of the UFO cover-up government scenario. So,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. I mean, I was told when I first got into, you know, the whole visual evidence thing, that no matter how good your picture or your video is, half the people will believe it and half the people won't. And for my money, it's not worth me sitting down for 72 hours straight when a case breaks to really go over it with a fine-tooth comb, unless it's really good, or it's a really huge, impactful, possibly landmark case. And O'Hare, to me, was a landmark case, and not enough has been done to follow up on it, unfortunately. So,
given your,
if I lived there, I would be, but I don't.
Given your expertise, have you ever looked at any Bigfoot photos?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Most of what I got from the Bigfoot community was pareidolic pictures of trees.
Yeah.
Where somebody I would get the picture and they'd say, he's right in front of the camera. And I'd say, I'm not seeing him. Can you point him out? And they'd draw a circle around it. And I go, okay, that's a coagulation of leaves.
Yeah.
You know, it looks like a person. I get what you're saying. But was there evidence of it moving? No. Okay, then it's pareidolia. It's an illusion. That's what I've seen the most of. I've never really gotten something with fur, you know,
yeah.
That's moving. No, I've never gotten that. I do get ghost photographs quite a bit, which I almost find more intriguing than UFO pictures.
How
because
so?
Some of those,
because we're dealing with a
whole
some of, different kettle of fish in a way?
I think people are more willing to come forward with a name and tell you what happened with a ghost picture than they are with UFO pictures. I hate to say it that way. It's almost like shows like Ghost Hunters and Ghost Adventures and every other, you know, half-assed relation of Ghost Hunters on the air has given that field a margin of respectability. And
who?
Openness, you know. Well, I mean, to the general public. I mean,
I know exactly what you mean. I was being sarcastic, but
it's I mean, you're right in a sense, but I mean, people are a lot more willing to talk about having a ghost experience with you in public, like a coworker.
Yeah, ghosts are cool. Ghosts are part of that sort of like geek culture that's become.
It's become
popular.
Socially acceptable to talk about. You know, your paranormal experience these days has become more accepted than any time I can ever remember.
Hmm.
And, I mean, back when I started, people looked at you sideways, like, really? Nowadays, people are, oh, really? Tell me about it. What happened? You know, what'd you see? You know, and ghost photographs to look at, they exhibit everything that a UFO photograph, a good UFO photograph, show. In that they are the only similarity is that they are completely ambiguous. You know, they definitely show something, but what?
Yeah.
Ambiguity is the and you know, and they're fascinating to look at. I mean, some of them are astounding. And Justin Nine said in the in the chat room, UFOs are sky ghosts, and I could not possibly agree with you more. That is exactly what they are. We are being haunted, you know, in our skies. That's more, in my opinion, this is just my opinion, that you're more right than you could possibly know in that department. So, yeah, you know, it's the photographic stuff is interesting, but what do you do with it in the end?
Yeah, I mean, you really can't do much with it. I am fascinated by the point you're making about this acceptance of the paranormal and how it has gotten better. It's sort of a disappointing turn of events, though, that just as it's kind of okay to talk about the paranormal, that UFOs are kind of, you know, I feel like they've left us, even though there's still good pictures. And, you know, like this one, I didn't know about this creep one, but, you know, even though there's still solid evidence that comes in from time to time, I feel like the UFOs are, they've kind of had it with us. And one, that line of thought jumps into a point that I think is perfect, because it ties into the little audio clip from the sports talk radio show I listened to, Felger and Maz, where they were debating the existence of aliens, and the Jermaine Wiggins, formerly of the New England Patriots, was arguing that there's no good UFO photos anymore, and how there's so many cell phones and stuff. And when I talked to Travis Walden, he made the suggestion that the UFOs know that we have all these cameras now. So they've tailored or adjusted their agenda or rationale or style or however you want to put it. Their means to adapt to that. The fact that they're under constant surveillance just like the rest of us are. What do you think of that whole idea?
I know what Travis thinks about the phenomenon. I mean, we interviewed him on Paratopia, and I certainly don't condemn him or wholly disagree with his interpretation of his event and what he thinks the UFO represents. But to me, it represents something a lot more complex than that. And when you're talking about they know what we've got, and so they're staying or they're retailoring themselves to appear in different ways. That to me says, again, we're probably not dealing with anything from another planet. We're probably dealing with something that is vastly more complex than that and vastly superior to us, which we've known about. We've known the level that that the phenomena displays. But we don't know what the intelligence is thinking about it being one step ahead. It has always been one step ahead. The purpose of every UFO photograph that's worth its salt is that it's ambiguous, and that is the point. It's ambiguous. It is meant to be a confounding, and that is, in my opinion, for the present time, as of, you know, as of Tuesday at 10:33 p.m. Eastern time on this day, my opinion is that this is not a confounding. This is meant to confound us, and it will always be one step ahead of our technology. Although, if there is a quantum leap in artificial intelligence, you know, I said on Paratopia years ago that I think when we will start to realize that we are not alone and that there's probably more tenants in the building that we are unaware of, technology will see them first. And by that I mean...
Yeah, I know exactly.
The AI will look at Tim Banal and go, Tim, what is that outside the window? And he'll go, there's nothing there. And he'll say, oh, I beg to differ. There's clearly something there. Oh, well, the robot must be glitching. You know, and
no,
once
he just
we figure out
like
that
an
it's
infrared
not,
or something, yeah. Yeah.
He sees in whatever,
right,
you know,
yeah,
in whatever way he can, which may be in a way that it reconfigures itself.
Hmm.
You know, I think part of the reason that all these things become, or stay rather, enigmatic and unknown is because we simply don't have the abilities to perceive them as they are. I think we're getting bit slices of what this stuff represents, and even bit slice experiences with it. And we really don't know what it is, or what it's trying to say. And in the end, it's going to take something. It's going to take a grand leap of technology, I think, to be able to perceive these things in a completely different way that might tell us something more about what it might be, or where it might originate.
I don't know if
that's,
go ahead. Yeah. I was just going to say, I don't know if I'd be happy, elated that the computers figured it out before us, or annoyed and mad, where I'd be, my reaction would be, you know, oh man.
Yeah, well, I think
how did you guys do it?
Right. Think about it. You know, if we fit some sort of intelligence, an AI intelligence that we create with infrared, like you said, it's got infrared, it's got mass spectrometer, it's got all of these things, and it says, well, I can improve upon that because I kind of learned this technology better than you because you programmed me. Now I can evolve it because I can think better than you. So I'm going to sit down, I'm going to make something that sees in every spectrum of light that terms that you are unaware of with your meatball eyes. Well, it may see things. And it itself may go, this must be a glitch, this must be something odd. But then it will come to realize it is seeing what it's seeing. And I think at that point, it will tell us. But I think it will be viewed as an anomaly still by the AI intelligence. We'll probably still see it as, I'm witnessing an anomaly. This should not be here, but it will learn what the anomaly is. I think it will end up probably being less confounded than we are, but still confounded.
Well, it won't have all the human biases of
exactly
what it wishes it could be, or... is it the return of Jesus or any of this other stuff?
Exactly.
It will be very logical about it. It would almost be if we could get the skeptics to give it a fair shake.
Exactly. So, you know, it's a possibility. I mean, this is, you know, I'm a futurist in the sense that I think our technology will one day say, what is that? Ask us directly, what is that? And we will say, there's nothing there. And they'll say, I beg to differ.
Oh, man, that would be a great Twilight Zone episode.
It would be, yes.
That's what will start the human-robot war over whether UFOs are real or not.
Right, exactly.
Someone write all this down. This could be...
There's a book here. Give it away.
Vanny, you're going to love this stuff. Tell me a little bit. Let's... actually, I have a bunch of different notes here, so I don't even know where to begin on this. But I do. I kind of made the point too. I think it was to Vaney about. Do you think? I guess the technology will have to become the crutch for us, because I do think that that we're limited as a species in being able to maybe even understand this stuff.
Yeah.
Because we just see in a certain way. You know, we hear certain frequencies. It's like that weird thing they have that people under 60 can hear and people over can't, or something like that. There's
right.
Like that.
Yeah.
You know, or those things. I think they're fake, but you put them in the house and they make a mouse go away and you can't hear it, but it's a supersonic sound.
Right, yeah.
You know, maybe as a species, we're actually just incapable of even ever understanding this whole thing, which is another maddening part of it. It's like the blind man who desperately wants to see, but it's just never going to happen. I guess unless the technology comes along to help.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I think it is beyond us, but I think that it's always going to be beyond us. I think if we figure out certain things, then it's going to switch gears and go in a different direction. And like you said about the photographs and what Travis Walton said about how they're evolving past being able to be spotted. And somebody, I don't know, and here's where I probably need a history lesson. I don't know who it was that said UFOs are here to make us think. Think he meant it in such a way as we're supposed to ponder these things and recognize the grander picture of reality and all that. But I think it's more than that. I think that in the process of being a confounding, that it is actively evolving us. I think it is suggesting things in our culture. I think it is injecting itself here and there. You know, there's been plenty of weird instances that have spawned interesting inventions and innovations. And I think that's part of this. I think that whatever it is staying ahead of us to confound us, to push us forward. And that may be the reason for all of this. I mean, it may be us evolving ourselves. It could be the collective unconscious. It could be any number of weird things that we don't understand completely. But we have these interesting names like collective unconscious and collective consciousness and manifestations. What does that mean? I mean, a manifestation means out of nothing comes something. And, there's people in the paranormal who claim to have the answers through physics and people who have claimed to have the answers through direct experience and through photos. And, I mean, everybody's got an angle. And the problem is everybody claims too much information. I think too many people are afraid to say, I just don't know. Don't know what this means.
I've been a champion of I don't know for a long time. That's not
yeah, me too. Me too. I mean, yeah.
People shouldn't be afraid to say that in this field. That's the big problem.
Well, the problem is I don't know doesn't sell.
Mm, exactly. You know.
So there you are.
Yeah, yeah. The funny part, too, about the clip at the beginning is, and I think I told Jeremy this story. I don't know if I told it on Paratopia when I was on, but I went to see a hypnotist to try and quit smoking. As anyone who's listened to the program for the last hour and 40 minutes knows, that did not work, because you've probably heard me flicking my lighter over the last so times. He was really snarky and obnoxious, and I asked him about alien abductions just because he's a hypnotist, and you never know what kind of weird stuff you might hear from somebody who theoretically may have come across something interesting. But he was a real jerk about it and said, oh, you know, that's all garbage. And, you know, the funny thing is that everybody nowadays has these cell phones and you never see any pictures of UFOs anymore. And it was like the guy from the clip at the beginning of the show here. We need to get rid of that misconception that there aren't any UFO photos or, you know, with so many cell phones, there should be more UFO photos. There are. That's the problem.
Yeah, there definitely is. Yeah. Yeah, people are actively capturing things. It's just that don't expect just because the technology gets better, don't expect the evidence to get better.
Exactly.
I agree with Travis to a point. I go a different means to the end, but, I mean, in the end, it is... It's not going to show us what we want to see. And I think that's intentional. I don't think that's a mistake. I don't think it's photographer error or technology error. I think it's, you know, that's the way this works. It's part of this, you know, and hoaxes as well are part of this. It's, you know, I used to get really agitated with people who hoax stuff. And now it just becomes something that I expect because it's part of what this is. I don't say every hoaxer is influenced by the phenomena to do a hoax, but way too many times when I've caught a hoaxer and I've asked, why did you do this? The answer was, I don't know. I just felt compelled to do it.
Interesting.
And, you know, and I've had that more often than not. And I think that says something. I think that says, you know, that it's part of this, you know, it's to be expected, if nothing else.
That speaks to the people who make the crop circles that feel like they're getting some kind of information or divination to do it.
Exactly.
So, I think Justin says human desire. I think it goes beyond that. I think it goes to something in the ether that's in some out-of-body influence, let's say. But who knows
external,
what that is.
Yeah, some kind of external influence, yeah.
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 Hillbilly wants to know, ancient aliens, does Jeff have a comment on the show or the idea?
Wow. Love Giorgio's hair. I wish I had that much hair.
I don't even watch the show, so I have really nothing to add other than I just find all paranormal TV to be yearning. That I'll take the word right from Justin's chat post. Yeah, I find it to be lacking.
Yeah, I mean, do I think that there was ever an extraterrestrial culture that may have stopped here? I mean, anything's possible. I don't find it likely. I think a lot of the evidence that they show on there for, well, to support their points is really weak. But some of it is interesting, and some of it can be taken one of two ways, and I think they go off in a way that may not be the rational way, but be just as likely. I mean, who in the hell knows? What do I know? I'm no historian when it comes to that stuff, but there's certainly some odd things. And I used to look at, I mean, you want to talk ancient aliens? I used to look at the fresco paintings of Christ and you know, being baptized, and saw the disc in the air with the three beams hitting him, and say, this was painted in 16-something. What the hell is this? And then you come to find out that, you know, the disc in the sky was a representation of the three lights were the Trinity. The disc was to symbolize the communion wafer. I mean, there's all this symbology that we know nothing about today, but they were well aware of back then. And now today we interpret that artwork as it's a UFO, when in fact it's a Pope's hat that's been thrown in the air, because the Pope at the time threw his hat in the air. This was something he did. I mean, this was well known. And a lot of these flying saucer pictures that you see, like there's a famous one, it's German, Mary is being hit by a ray of light from what appears to be a flying saucer in the air outside of town. And when you look closely at this thing and you actually get a good look at it, it's a cloud with angels in it. It's not a UFO. It's a cloud. It's the way they symbolically painted back then. And I think a lot of the stuff you see on Ancient Aliens is representative of the time, but not. It doesn't hold water for us now because we don't understand what they meant.
Exactly. You kind of clear that up in a lot of ways. I never really thought of it in that way, but if the guy painted a UFO in the picture, he would have to explain that to people. And if he was explaining it as a UFO, then it stands to reason that he wouldn't do it unless he wasn't going to get crap for it. So,
well, yeah.
It therefore would be an accepted part of the culture back then, which means that it wouldn't be such a crazy thing now.
Or it would be perceived as a god, which is the more likely answer.
I suppose,
If somebody did see a UFO, it would be representative. The Egyptians, are often the ones that are pointed to. Oh, they knew something. You know, they mirrored Orion on the ground with the pyramids, and why did they build the pyramids, and how did they build the pyramids? And the Sphinx is at least twice as old as what we think, so is that Atlantis? And I mean, there's all this stuff that you can go off on tangents for hours about, but in the end, we don't know what they knew, and we don't know how they represented different things in their culture that to us seem to be completely extraterrestrial-oriented, but maybe something completely benign and known to them that was, of course, why wouldn't we do that?
Exactly.
It's all interpretation, and, I think they go to great leaps to interpret things their way. And, I think you got to take it with a grain of salt.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head there. I was just about to say, at the end of the day, it's a TV show. So That's really what people need to remember. As far as the ancient alien theory, I find it interesting, but...
Yeah, I do too.
I don't know what to do with it, so...
Yeah.
I feel like I'm going to apologize to the people that write in later. I feel like I've said a lot tonight, so...
that's okay.
That's the casual level of this conversation, but I know there's a few people that write in, why are you saying you know all the time? I'm not doing it on purpose.
Yeah, it's like I'm a big guy.
Yeah.
Just to put kind of a cherry on top of this with the ancient aliens thing, and even you saying, I think you said a very important thing there, which is, what do you do with it? What do I do with that? And my answer is the same for, people who want to focus on Roswell, or people who want to harp to death on the airships of 18 whatever. Why do you even care about that? It's so far in the past that it matters little if you can explain the airships of 1886 or 1896 or whatever it was. Does that really matter? is that really relevant to today? Are you going to learn something you can apply today from explaining the airships? I don't see the connective tissue there. I think we have things going on today that we need to be following a hell of a lot more closely rather than keep poking through the trash can of ufology to see what we can get out of that dustbin. You know, some of this stuff got buried years ago and should have stayed there. And when we get bored, well, let's go back to Roswell. Well, let's go back to, you know, these days, Bentwaters. Let's go back to that. You know, it's like, let's move on. There's shit going on now that we need to pay attention to. And
we're not. It's a combination of boredom and desperation because we've reached, you know, the edge of the cliff here. And so we turn back around to see if we missed some path that we should have gone down in the first place.
Exactly.
You know.
Yeah, I can see if you find a new turn and you want to apply that turn to an old case. Yeah, I'm with that. But, you know.
Rehashing and
It's over. Let's move on.
I guess we're heading towards the close here. And Justin wants to know about Project Core. So it's good to sort of throw plugs in towards the end. Mm-hmm. So what's the latest on Project Core, which you were working on with Vaney and Dr. Tyler Cokejohn and other folks?
That's going to be probably out and about around the end or middle of January. I am still writing, actually. I'm probably writing the longest paper because I keep changing things and I keep recognizing different things in the data that I want to talk about. And so I'm still writing on mine, but statistically I'm finished. And statistically I think we're all finished. But, you know, with the holidays coming up, you know, we all know this. You know this, Tim, that during the holidays the podcast listenerships go down and the radio listenerships go down because people are out shopping. They're worried about other things like, I don't know, real life. And ultimately we figured it's best to wait till after the holidays when everybody settles into the new year, and then we'll present what we've got.
Yeah.
And that way everybody's got time to listen and pay attention because it is, for the most part, as far as I'm concerned, at least from my end of things, it's a lot more complex, again, than I expected it to be. So, you know, expect it in January.
There you go. All right. Now tell me, I asked you about this earlier before we started, but I want to talk a little bit about this guitar that I used for the picture to promote the thing. And I also should mention, we talked a couple days ago, the inspiration for these, quote-unquote, nice graphics that I do come from Jeff's outstanding graphics that he does for for his show. Yeah, I was like, I love those things. I'm going to make them, but I only have the expertise in paint. So that's why mine looked like they were done by a third grader. But right. I used your picture of the guitar, which was featured in Popular Mechanics, which is awesome. You actually
right.
made that. That's not a drawing or anything.
No, yeah.
Amazing.
I build guitars in my spare time, of which I have none of. That started out as, I wanted to build a guitar because I heard a really great song and I thought, I wonder what that song would sound like or look like, it formulated on a guitar body. Like, how do I do this? And back in the 80s, I mean, I was in metal bands all through, the 1980s, not hair bands, mind you, but Maiden, Judas Priest, that sort of stuff. And I could never afford, people who are familiar with 80s music, George Lynch's Mother guitar or, anything custom, anything that looked different than what everybody else had. And I always wanted that. And I thought, well, I can do it myself now, so I'm going to build what I want to build. And I made that guitar.
It's amazing.
And I did it, and I was like, this is actually pretty neat. And I went to a gig, and I played it at a gig, and everybody was, like, astounded by it. And my son actually sent it into boingboing.net, which is one of the largest outflows of blog content on the internet, and they published it, and I thought, well, maybe I should throw this up on eBay and make another one, and maybe try to make a side business out of this, and it went around the world. I mean, it literally went around the world. Before I knew it, there were people writing me from Germany and Russia and China and Japan and Sweden and Denmark and Italy and the UK, everywhere. This thing was on every guitar blog you could imagine. It was a full page done on it in Guitar World magazine. As you said, Popular Mechanics, Bizarre magazine, Wired magazine. It went every place. And I'm still like godsmacked that happened. At one point, I was doing it for a living and got an offer I couldn't refuse to do graphic play. So I ended up kind of shelving it as my full-time job. But I still do it, and I haven't built one in a while, but I'm working on one now. And I think it's going to surpass this one. I mean, I think it's going to make a bigger splash.
Nice.
Is it hard to make it, there's
like another element to making the guitar that I know that I could never do, or maybe I could. Maybe it's actually the easy part. But is there difficulty in trying to make it actually sound right?
When you're taking that one that you've got pictured, I mean, that's actually more modifications than building. I have built guitars from two blocks of wood.
Hmm.
That takes a hell of a lot longer. I mean, the guitar that you've got pictures there is a Jackson Rhodes V, and it's basically what Randy Rhodes used to play as a flying V, the flop-sided V. But when I saw it, I saw a ray gun, and I'm like, I'm going to make this into a ray gun, or a tank, or some amalgamation of something weird,
yeah.
Which ended up being called steampunk. And I had no idea that's what it was called. I didn't even know about steampunk when I built it. It just, all of a sudden, that's what it was.
Hmm.
And that's kind of set everything on its ear in the steampunk world to where I'm getting people writing me saying, can I use your thing in my steampunk comic? Can I use your guitar in my artwork? Can I draw your guitar? Can I 3D model your guitar? You know, yeah, do what you want, you know? But eventually, I get a call one day from a guy, and he says, I've got a client who wants one of your guitars. And I said, great. He's like, well, he's an international recording artist, and his name is T-Pain. And I said, I don't know who that is, because I didn't. But I came to find out he's huge in the rap hip-hop world, and has done all sorts of producing and writing, and it's not my kind of music, but he's an amazing talent in his music.
Hmm.
And so his wife wanted one for his birthday, so I built one for him, which he freaked out on and actually put all over his new album cover and used it on his MTV videos and all of that. So that was a big deal. And these days it's like, I think steampunk is kind of waning a little bit. I don't think it's quite as big as it was. And I think it's going more towards an amalgamation of steam and cyberpunk stuff. I mean, it's really kind of, it's evolving, which I think is cool. And so, yeah, I think I'm staying in the line of, I'll just say it. I mean, the guitar I'm working on now that I've been working on for close to 6 months, is the Titanic. And it's going to be, you know, what the Titanic looks like right now. It's based upon that, not what she looked like.
Oh, that sounds badass.
When she was above water.
Yeah, wow. Holy crap.
But I wanted to have it done for the 100th anniversary, which was last year. And now we're almost a year past that, I think. I think still the Titanic being 101 years old is still important as 100 years old. So,
yeah, nobody's going to stop talking about it because it was 100
years. Exactly. So it's still a historical event. So that's coming. I'm still doing it. It's a total sidebar now for me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, we're really close to the close now. Paranormal Waypoint is the show. You're actually moving to this time slot, which is kind of weird, but For folks that think
we may have to reevaluate that.
Yeah.
But
no, it's cool. Hey, for folks that think we're in competition, let me just tell them that at 9 p.m. last Tuesday night, The Voice had 11.64 million viewers. So Jeff and I aren't in competition with each other. We're in competition with The Voice.
Yes, this is true. Yes.
And I even suggested guests and stuff for him, so I'm perfectly cool with that. Listen to Jeff's show if you want. Listen to my show if you want. Listen to them both, preferably, you know, when you get the chance.
Yeah.
So it's all good. And people can find out about that at ParanormalWaypoint.com, right?
Right, yeah, or KGRARadio.com.
KGRARadio.com, yeah.
That's right.
That little British lady. They can't hear her, but we can, and she is...
That's right.
She is annoying. She's a real pistol, that one.
Well,
Jeff, I got to thank you. We'll throw the plugs in after the live show, folks, because I want to enjoy this final minute with Jeff. I really want to thank you for coming on the show. This was a thoroughly entertaining conversation, thoroughly enjoyable, just really a blast. And the time flew by, and I loved it. I really did.
Oh, yeah. And I always thought.
And I'm glad we got you in case the time slots don't mesh. That way we could actually have you on the show. And it worked out. Maybe we'll do a simulcast someday or something like that.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic. Love it. Yeah, I had a great time too, Jim. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
I really enjoyed it quite a bit. I loved it, honestly. I really did. It was an awesome conversation. We covered so much stuff and from a whole bunch of different angles that I, honestly, going into this, I didn't know we were going to get into. So just awesome stuff. And, folks, check out that Crete photo. We'll put a link up to it. It's amazing. It really is. It's breathtaking. But...
Yeah.
Until then, for the live folks listening, we got, 18 seconds left. So I want to thank you all for tuning in on the next edition of the program. We're also going to be live once again, 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time next Tuesday. It's Ruxgiving 2013. Send your questions in for Bruce Rux, folks. Definitely want to hear from you. Thanks for tuning in tonight. All right, we've lost the live listeners, so let me just throw in the plugs. If you're just finding us somehow and you don't know how, you want to find out more about us, go to banalofamerica.com. You spell that B-I-N-N-A-L-L of America.com. If you're on Facebook, punch in Banal of America and like us. That's where you'll find out more information on us and what the next episodes are and how you can do stuff like submit questions for Ruxgiving. And we got the big 9th annual holiday Stanton Friedman coming up in about a month. We're going to want your questions for that as well. I do this show for free. There's no commercials. There's no subscriptions. There's nothing like that. And I have to pay for it, obviously, out of my own pocket. So if you could help us out, that would be fantastic. You can find out how to do that by going to Banal of America. There's a PayPal button right there. Click that. That'll take you to PayPal. They'll walk you through the process. It's safe, simple, and secure. But if you don't trust them, if you really don't trust the internet in general and you want to mail a donation, we have a P.O. Box address that you can find also at Banal of America. As I said, next episode, that is next week, November 26th, a couple of days before Thanksgiving. It's our annual holiday tradition, Ruxgiving 2013. We want your questions for Bruce Rux. Send them in or post them on the Facebook page. With all that said, I'll give you one more teaser. We got a wild taped episode coming up for December 3rd. You're definitely going to want to tune into that one, folks. And on that note, thank you all very much for listening. Thank you for your enduring support of VOA Audio. And thank you for making the program part of your esoteric audio playlist. Until next time, this is Tim Badal. Thank you once again for listening and signing off.